This is The Takeaway. I'm Todd Zwillick. Glad to have you with us. And we begin today in Puerto Rico.
People's nerves are frayed after having to live in these makeshift circumstances, whether they're in the mountains and getting water from a PVC pipe, or they're here in the Capitol and they still don't have water, they still don't have electricity. And so they've got two or three or four families piled into one house, whichever person could afford a generator.
Caitlin Dickerson of the New York Times there. She's been reporting from Puerto Rico, where it's been nearly a month since Hurricane Maria hit the island. There has been progress in recovery on the outer, more developed rim of the island. On the interior, conditions are different. Food and water are short. It's forced residents to band together and help each other out.
There's very much a culture here of, I think, you know, every single person I've interviewed has said, well, but others have it worse than I do, so I don't want to complain. So there's a bit of that too, a sort of generosity of spirit that I've seen.
A lot of towns have still not seen adequate aid. In some cases, the people who live there have turned to DIY ingenuity to solve life or death problems, making use of whatever they can find. From San Juan, Caitlin Dickerson tells us what she's been seeing around the island.
I've seen really an incredible level of improvising and creativity from people who live in the mountains who don't have running water and have redirected water from higher up using PVC pipes and have created these sort of spouts that are on the sides of highways where people line up to fill up water bottles to bring home, and they use that water to flush their toilets. To a community I was told about by the U.S. military where there was a person who was diabetic living there, and the community didn't receive any aid for more than a week. And so when the U.S. military arrived, they saw that locals had created a makeshift way to refrigerate this person's insulin underwater because they didn't have any electricity and were keeping the insulin cold that way. The community redirected water, like I described earlier, but created a spout just to one person's house, a woman who was pregnant. She was 7 months pregnant and didn't have any aid for more than a week. So, and communities are really banding together. You know, when you go and visit these rural neighborhoods, they've very often chosen someone sort of unofficially to serve in a secretarial role, and that person keeps track of how much aid is received and makes sure that it's distributed evenly across neighborhoods. So it's interesting, as hard a time as people are having, I'm hearing over and over again that this storm has really brought communities across the island together.
What about infrastructure, Caitlin? What about the roads, the bridges, the ways in and out of some of the small towns and villages that you've been covering?
More than 100 bridges were damaged and 18 were completely destroyed. That includes a bridge to one neighborhood I visited in the center of the country where people had no way in or out. They've been trapped there. Their cars are stuck there. They can't go to work or go to school. And they actually created this makeshift pulley that they connected a shopping cart to and are using a shopping cart and pulling it back and forth across where this bridge once was to transfer aid back and forth. So those bridges are going to take a really long time to repair. And people there really don't know what they're going to do, how they're going to be able to start going to work or school. I mean, they can try to set up a carpool, but there are more than 100 people who live in the village. I mean, each one can't be driven to and from everywhere they need to go. Generally speaking, across the island, most roads have been cleared of debris at this point, but that means not that, you know, things look normal. That means there are huge, huge piles of debris on the sides of the road almost everywhere, which still haven't been picked up, which are starting to rot, starting to smell, and which people are worried about because they're attracting rats and other animals that can create safety risks.
We talked a lot about water and even medical supplies. What about food?
There are an incredible number of people on the island who are still surviving on these ready-to-eat military meals, these freeze-dried meals that you add water to. And people have been, like I said, in you know, surprisingly good spirits about it, but that is certainly going to get old. And it also can be hard to digest for people who aren't used to eating it. Beyond those, you know, there's more than half of the country still doesn't have electricity. And so people who had electric stoves are at a loss for cooking. I've seen people making huge batches of rice on their barbecue outside for the entire family that they sort of, you know, ration out throughout the week. Or again, you know, people coming together in neighborhoods, everybody cooking in one place with one person who has a gas stove. I visited one home yesterday where a family had dug out a gas stove that was really a family heirloom that had been sitting in a garage that hadn't been used in 40 years. They said it was filled with cockroach eggs and mold, and they cleaned that out. And the entire neighborhood has been eating food that was cooked on that stove. People are really improvising to make do and in decently good spirits about it. But as you can imagine, it's really hard to live that way.
Well, Caitlin, you're at the command center in San Juan now, and I wonder how aware the government authorities, the relief authorities, were of all these situations, all these conditions, before you put them in the paper.
It's hard to say. I mean, I think that people here know how bad it is. You know, the reality for government officials appears to be that people really underestimated the damage to infrastructure that this storm would do, right? And so as a result, in the first several weeks, there were people sort of dying immediately of storm-related injuries, far more people who lost their entire homes than they expected and were forced into shelters. And so there was a lot of time spent on sort of acute life-saving measures, you know, of making sure that people had bottled water and military ready-to-eat meals so that their lives weren't in danger. And now as you're seeing the island transition to this phase two where, okay, people have something to eat, they have water, but they have almost nothing else. You know, what comes next? I do think the response there has been slow, and that's been frustrating for a lot of people here.
Caitlin Dickerson of the New York Times has been reporting from the interior of Puerto Rico, where a do-it-yourself makeshift culture has developed to cope with the basics of life a month after Maria. Caitlin Dickerson, thanks so much for being with us.
Thank you for having me.
While some Puerto Ricans resort to makeshift culture to put their lives back together on the island, others have left entirely for the mainland. Joan Figueroa fled Puerto Rico on September 25th with her husband, Nadir. They're currently with family in Elmira, New York. And Joan, you've lived in Puerto Rico for 50 years, is that right?
That's right. I went there right out of school in New York City, as a matter of fact, as a Bellevue NYU nurse. Went down there to spend just a few months, met my husband, and the rest is history. 50 years. That's right.
50 years in Puerto Rico with your husband, which means leaving has to be a big decision for you and your husband, Nadir. Can you describe the aftermath of Maria and what made the two of you decide to leave?
Yes. Well, in our particular case, we're obviously an older couple at this point, living in Miramar, which is part of San Juan. And we live on the 15th floor of a condo. It happens to be the top floor. Cross ventilation, totally unable to stay there during the storm and afterward. Not a tremendous amount of damage, but with the generators very low on fuel, our elevators were down to one elevator occasionally, and then none when fuel was not available. So absolutely very, very difficult. And the heat we're experiencing at this time of year, to be going up walking 15 flights of stairs and then down again. And then when we saw the scarcity starting, we realized that this would not be a situation we should stay in.
Do you and your husband have the feeling of having fled your home, being sort of refugees in your own country, or does it feel like you're just on a long trip and staying with family?
I believe I'm having a little bit better of an adjustment than my husband. He is originally from Arecibo, Puerto Rico. He's 80 years old, and this is his home. Puerto Rico is his home, as well as it is mine, being there just over 50 years. But it really is much more difficult for him. I see him daydreaming about it. I've even heard him say, "I have a home. I have a home." Yes, we have a home, dear. We do have a home, and we will return. We just can't return right now.
Well, Joan, I wonder what you're hearing from your friends and family who might have fled like you, or even ones who are back there cleaning up, because there has to be a concern that many thousands of people now could leave Puerto Rico and not return because their homes are destroyed or their businesses are destroyed. Do you think a mass exodus is a risk here?
As you obviously know, Puerto Rico had also, due to our financial state, we had lost a lot of people. So now with this, it definitely exacerbates a situation that without a doubt probably Not probably. The odds are many, many are leaving. If you have no job, well, even my hairdresser has told me we are leaving. Her husband is an air conditioning technician, and there's no job. They said we can't pay our rent. She was able to tell me. So without a doubt, Todd, we're going to be losing a large, large part of a population. And that is very, very sad. But those who can will stay. Those who can will stay.
Well, Joan Figueroa, we're so glad that you and Nadir, your husband, are doing well. Sorry you had to flee your home in Puerto Rico, but glad that you're doing well in New York, and also glad that you plan to return. So thank you for joining us to talk to us today.
Thank you so much for having me on.
NYC Now delivers breaking news, top headlines, and in-depth coverage from WNYC and Gothamist every morning, midday, and evening. By sponsoring our programming, you'll reach a community of passionate listeners in an uncluttered audio experience. Visit sponsorship.wnyc.org to learn more.